ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 1, entitled The Curse Upon the Yadu Dynasty, Text Number 1. I'll read the first verse because I think tomorrow they'll read the second verse. So you can carefully hear and repeat.
Shri Shuka Uvacha Kritva Daityavadam Krishna Saramo Yadubir Vritaha भुवो अवतार यद्बारम् जविष्टम् जनयन् कलिम्। श्रीशुक उवाच कृत्वा दैत्यवदम् कृष्ण सरामो यदुभिर्वृतः भुवोऽवतार यद्बारम् जविष्टम् जनयन् कलिम्। श्रीशुक उवाच कृत्वा दैत्यवदम् कृष्ण सरामो यदुभिर्वृतः भुवोऽवतार यद्बारम् जविष्टम् जनयन् कलिम्। श्रीशुक उवाच कृत्वा दैत्यवदम् कृष्ण सरामो यदुभिर्वृतः भुवोऽवतार यद्बारम् जविष्टम् जनयन् कलिम्। श्रीशुक उवाच कृत्वा दैत्यवदम् कृष्ण सरामो यदुभिर्वृतः भुवोऽवतार यद्बारम् जविष्टम् जनयन् कलिम्। श्रीशुक उवाच कृत्वा दैत्यवदम् कृष्ण सरामो यदुभिर्वृतः भुवोऽवतार यद्बारम् जविष्टम् जनयन् कलिम्।
Word-to-word translation.
శ్రీ శుక ఉవాచ. శ్రీ శుక సెడ్, కృత్వా హ్యావింగ్ పర్ఫార్మ్డ్ దైత్య ఆఫ్ ది డీమన్స్ వదం ద కిల్లింగ్ కృష్ణ లార్డ్ కృష్ణ స రామ అకంపనీడ్ బై బలరామ్ యదుబి బై ద యదూస్ వృత సరౌండెడ్ భువ ఆఫ్ ది ఎర్త్ అవతారయత్ కాస్డ్ టు బి లెసెండ్ భారం ద బర్డన్ జవిష్టం మోస్ట్ సడన్ లీడింగ్ టు వైలెన్స్ జనయన్ రైజింగ్ కలిం ఎ స్టేట్ ఆఫ్ క్వారల్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ అండ్ పర్పోర్ట్ బై ద డిసైపుల్స్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఏసీ భక్తివేదాంత స్వామి శ్రీ ప్రభుపాద్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్. శ్రీ శుకదేవ్ గోస్వామి సెడ్, లార్డ్ శ్రీ కృష్ణ అకంపనీడ్ బై బలరామ్ అండ్ సరౌండెడ్ బై ద యదు డైనస్టీ ఎగ్జిక్యూటెడ్ ద కిల్లింగ్ ఆఫ్ మెనీ డీమన్స్. దెన్ ఫర్దర్ టు రిమూవ్ ద బర్డన్ ఆఫ్ ద ఎర్త్ ద లార్డ్ అరేంజ్డ్ ఫర్ ద గ్రేట్ బ్యాటిల్ ఆఫ్ కురుక్షేత్ర విచ్ సడన్లీ ఎరప్టెడ్ ఇన్ వైలెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ ద కురూస్ అండ్ ది పాండవాస్. So I was told to read the purport from the third paragraph. So I will read from the third paragraph. Yesterday the first two paragraphs were covered. Purport. Lord Shri Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita that when there is a predominance of such chaotic irreligious activities, irreligious societies on the earth, he personally descends to rectify the imbalance. Thus from the very beginning of his transcendental infancy, Krishna systematically killed the powerful asuras or demons who were an intolerable burden for the earth. Lord Shri Krishna was assisted by his brother Balaram, who is also the supreme personality of Godhead. Although the God is one, he can expand himself to enjoy in many forms at once. That is his omnipotence. And the first such expansion is Balaram or Baladev. Balaram killed many noteworthy demons, including Denukasur, Dvivida, and the envious Rukmi. Krishna was also accompanied by the members of the Yadu dynasty, many of whom were demigods who had descended to assist the Lord. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, however, has revealed that although many demigods had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty to assist the Lord, some members of the Yadu dynasty were actually inimical toward Krishna. Because of their mundane mission of the Lord, they considered themselves to be on the same level as Krishna. Having taken birth in the family of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, they had inconceivable strength, and thus they misunderstood Krishna's supreme position. Having forgotten that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, they would constitute a great burden, and consequently, it was necessary for Krishna to remove them from the earth. There is a popular saying that familiarity breeds contempt. To destroy the contemptuous members of his own dynasty, the Lord caused a quarrel among them. For this purpose, he arranged for Narada and other sages to display anger against the Karshnas, the members of his family. Although many Yadus who are devoted to Krishna were apparently killed in this fratricidal war, Lord Krishna actually returned them to their original positions as universal directors or demigods. It is the Lord's promise in Bhagavad Gita that he will always protect those who are favorable to his service. Srila Vishnu Chakra Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, has given a summary of the entire 11th canto as follows. Chapter 1 describes the beginning of Maushal Leela, or the prelude to the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. chapters 2 through 5 describe the conversations between the 9 Yogendras and King Nimi. Chapter 6 describes the prayers of Brahma, Shiva and other residents of heaven. Chapter 7 through 29 present the conversation between Krishna and Uddhava, that is known as the Uddhava Gita. Chapter 30 describes the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty from the earth. The final chapter describes the disappearance of Lord Krishna.
Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So we welcome all the devotees for the Sunday Srimad Bhagavatam class. And we also welcome everyone for the beginning of the 11th canto. For the past, more than 5 or 6 years, we were discussing the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know when the next turn will come, maybe after 2 decades or something. But it's definitely very nice to hear so many different devotees speaking directly on the pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto. In fact, 11th canto is also the continuation of the Krishna's pastimes. But in the 11th canto, the main pastime of Krishna, which is being described, is mainly the instructions of Krishna to Uddhava. Whereas in the 10th canto, so many activities of Krishna were mentioned. So, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura has given a brief background of the 11th canto. So, 11th canto, in one sense, it is nothing but the events which actually lead to the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Krishna. That is the whole theme of the 11th canto. And the 11th canto begins with the first chapter. In that first chapter, the curse upon the Yadu dynasty that is being described in the first chapter. And then the second to fifth chapter, there is a meeting of Narada Muni with Vasudev, the father of Krishna. So in that conversation, Narada Muni narrates the another conversation which happened between Nimi Maharaj and the Nava Yogendras, the 9 Paramahamsa sons of Lord Rishabhadev, the 2nd to 5th chapter. And then in the 6th chapter, the demigods, just like the demigods before the appearance of Krishna, when the earth was overburdened, the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, they went to the shore of the milk ocean and they prayed for the appearance of Krishna. So now again the 11th canto, 6th chapter, the demigods come to Dwarka, headed by Lord Brahma. They actually offer praise to Krishna, and then Lord Brahma tells to Krishna that the purpose for which you appeared in this world, that is establishing dharma, the removing the burden of the earth, that has been accomplished. Now, if you so desire, you may return. So, just like even the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela also, by the Advaita Acharya's calling, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And then when Mahaprabhu established the Yuga Dharma, then Advaita Acharya sent a message through somebody to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that now in the marketplace there is no more customers to actually buy the rice. So he just gave a coded message to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So just there's a similarity between Chaitanya Leela and Krishna Leela. And then on behalf, then when the demigods offered this prayers, then Krishna prepared for his return to the spiritual world. That before returning to the spiritual world, Krishna speaks to Uddhava. Krishna gives the Uddhava Gita from the 7th chapter till the 29th chapter. 23 chapters containing Krishna's conversation with Uddhava is being narrated by Sukadeva Goswami. And then the 30th chapter is nothing but the disappearance of Yadu dynasty, and 31st chapter is disappearance of Krishna. So many times this question is asked about the discussing the disappearance of Krishna. So when in the case of the Vaishnavas, the disappearance of Vaishnava is given more importance than the appearance of a Vaishnava. Because when a Vaishnava appears, the glories of the Vaishnava is not known to the people. But when the Vaishnava disappears, he actually, the glories of the Vaishnava is known to the people, and he actually has demonstrated the Vaishnava behavior. So that in the case of Vaishnava, the disappearance of Vaishnava is celebrated more vividly, it is given more importance. Whereas with respect to the Supreme Lord, the disappearance pastime of the Supreme Lord is actually very painful for the devotees to discuss. So therefore, in the case of Supreme Lord, only the appearance of Krishna is celebrated, and that is discussed in great detail. But still, like few years back, His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Swami Maharaj was narrating in the Vrindavan Yatra. He was mentioning that although in the case of the Supreme Lord, the appearance of Krishna is given more importance, but we find that Sukadeva Goswami has described in detail about the disappearance of Krishna and disappearance of Yadu dynasty. And not only Sukadeva Goswami, several Vaishnava Acharyas like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Jiva Goswami, Sridhar Swami, they have given elaborate purports on the disappearance of Krishna and giving many valuable lessons for the sadhakas. So because the Mahajans like Sukadeva Goswami and the previous Acharyas, they have given several lessons, so therefore it becomes very much important for us to go through those lessons. So this was a point which was highlighted by Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj. So with this background, we'll begin with the first verse. So in this particular verse, Sukadeva Goswami says that Kritva Daitya Vadam Krishna. Kritva Daitya Vadam, after accomplishing the killing of the Daityas. So Daityas, it refers to the demons. Literally, it means the sons of Diti. Of course, in one purport, in the beginning of Krishna's appearance, the 10th canto, 1st chapter, Krishna Chakotipat says that Krishna, when the earth was overburdened by the Daityas, so here the Daityas word refers to not only who are born of the sons of Diti, but who have attained the demoniac status by their actions, even though they were not born of Diti. So Krishna, Daitya Vadam, it refers to not just the sons of Diti. In general, it is that those who are demons, who might have been born as the sons of Diti, or who have attained the demonic status by their actions, but who are not born of Diti. Kritva Daitya Vadam Krishna, Sa Ramo Yadubir Vritaha. So Krishna, Sa Ramo, along with Balaram, along with Balaram and surrounded by the different members of the Ayodhya dynasty, he actually killed the different daityas. And then, after accomplishing that, Bhuova Tarayat Bharam Javishtam Janayan Kalim. After the killing of several demons, personally, and also with the help of Balramji and the help of the other members of the Yadu dynasty, Bhuova Tarayat Bharam, in order to further remove the burden of the Mother Earth, Bharam means the burden, Bhuova Tarayat, Avataraya means in order to be lessen the burden of the Mother Earth further, Javishtam Janayan Kalim. So Krishna made an arranged for the battle of Kurukshetra, Javishtam Janayan Kalim. So Kalim means a quarrel. Krishna arranged for the battle of Kurukshetra, in which there was a quarrel between the Kauravas and the Pandavas, because of that the battle took place. And in that battle, the remaining so many other demons who are actually causing the burden to the Mother Earth, they were all made to assemble like in one particular place, and then Krishna removed the burden of the Mother Earth. So Krishna, in that sense, demonstrates the principle of management principle of being lazy intelligent. Like they talk about different four kinds of people: active fool, lazy fool, active intelligent, lazy intelligent. So Prabhupada says, when Giriraj Maharaj was little, was like finding difficult to manage a Juhu temple, so that time Prabhupada said that what you need to do personally, you must do it, and what you can delegate to others, you must actually delegate and act according to the principle of lazy intelligent. So Krishna also demonstrates his principle. He demonstrated that even in his fight with the Jarasandha, that Krishna did not kill Jarasandha. He actually, he wanted Jarasandha to accumulate all the demonic population, and then so that he can actually, he doesn't have to go through the trouble of accumulating all these people, and then he was like lazily waiting, and then he accumulated, and then Krishna killed all the demons. And here in the Kurukshetra, Krishna did not even participate in the battle actively. He was just acting as a chariot driver, and then all the people were actually killed in that battle. So in that way, Shukadeva Goswami begins this chapter. So we see that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the purpose of his appearance. Some of the most famous verses which most people have heard even before coming to Krishna consciousness, while watching the Mahabharata serial, Ramayana serial, Krishna says that yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. So whenever there is a decline of dharma and whenever there is an increase of adharma, I manifest myself, tadatmanam srijamyaham. So Krishna cannot tolerate the increase of adharma and decline of dharma. So that time he says, srijami literally means create. But here it means that I manifest my body which is eternal. Tadatmanam srijamyaham. That means I show my body which exists eternally as if it were created by my energy. So because in the case, it's not, in our case, the body is created, but in the case of Krishna, Krishna's body is eternal. Then one may ask the question, but establishing dharma and removing adharma can be performed by many of the Raja Rishis, many of the saintly kings, and it can be performed by many of the Brahma Rishis. What is the need for Krishna to, what is the need for you to appear personally? Then Krishna explains, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam dharma samsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So Krishna mentions the reason for his personal appearance in this particular verse. He mentions three reasons. Out of that, one reason is the principal reason. Paritranaya sadhunam. Tranaya means delivering. In order to completely deliver, paritranaya sadhunam, in order to deliver my surrendered devotee, sadhunam, vinashaya cha dushkritam, in order to kill the miscreants, the demons, and dharma samsthapa nartaya, in order to establish dharma, sambhavami yuge yuge, I appear in every yuga, again and again. So here, paritranaya sadhunam means that actually the surrendered devotees, the pure devotees, they already transcended the miseries of this material world. They transcended the joys and sorrows of this material world. So here it means, paritranaya sadhunam means, Krishna appears to mitigate the suffering of his pure devotees who are longing in separation from him. In order to actually give pleasure to his pure devotees, who are actually longing in separation from him, which is the principal reason for Krishna's appearance. And paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam. Vinashaya dushkritam, and Krishna says, and I also appear to kill the demons like Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Jarasandha, or Sishupal. These demons cannot be killed by except myself. So therefore, I appear to kill these demons who can be killed only by myself. And then, dharma samsthapanartaya. Sthapanartaya means to establish. Samsthapanartaya means to establish dharma in a very firm way. To establish dharma in such a way, it's explained that in order to correctly establish dharma, in order to firmly establish dharma, which cannot be performed by other Rajarishis or Brahmarishis, so I appear. In that sense, although the meaning of this verse, it may seem that it is included in the previous verse, but Krishna appears to mitigate the suffering in order to actually deliver his pure devotees who are actually longing in separation from him, in order to kill those demons who cannot be killed by himself, and in order to establish dharma in a firm manner which cannot be performed by anybody else. So I appear. So out of these three reasons, the primary reason for his appearance is the paritranaya sadhunam. But as a byproduct of that primary reason, as a natural byproduct of the primary reason, the other two reasons also actually are included in that. Because in order to actually, the other demons like Kamsa and other people, they were giving trouble to the devotees. So naturally Krishna had to kill them. And when he actually protects the pure devotees, when he actually gives pleasure to pure devotees, in that way he establishes the dharma in a firm manner. It means he establishes the dharma of devotional service, and he also establishes the dharma, the art of living in this world, according to the social order and the spiritual order. So in that sense, the primary reason is naturally connected with the secondary reason. So sometimes when people, they emphasize the primary reason of Krishna's appearance, but they forget the secondary reason, which is a very important reason for establishing dharma, for Krishna's appearance in this world. And sometimes one becomes so much concerned with establishing dharma, but when one forgets the primary reason for Krishna's appearance. But Krishna actually harmonizes both the primary and the secondary reason. So because in order to practice devotional service, one needs a lifestyle based on dharma. In order to sustainably practice sadhana bhakti, definitely one needs a lifestyle based on dharma. So Krishna definitely establishes that also when he appears. In fact, when Krishna appears, he stays in Vrindavan only for 10 or 12 years, and then he gives pleasure to the residents of Vrindavan. But the rest of the 100 years, he does give pleasure to so many devotees in Mathura, Dwaraka, etc. But primarily he spends for establishing dharma. So although the establishing dharma is the secondary reason, but Krishna apparently spends more time for the secondary reason, but he stayed in Vrindavan only for a short time. But he always had the love of the residents of Vrindavan in his heart. So in that way he established dharma. So when we talk about these two principles, Krishna coming to establish dharma in this world and Krishna coming to reciprocate with his pure devotees. So what are the principles which Krishna applies in discharging these two activities, these two actually duties? So Krishna, when it comes to reciprocating with his devotees, he actually gives himself to the devotees. There are so many verses in the Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam where Krishna says that, like a few days back we celebrated the Advaita Acharya's appearance day. Advaita Acharya got inspiration from a verse in which it is explained that Tulasi Jala Matrena. He says, that verse says that simply by offering Tulasi leaf and water to Krishna, Krishna becomes so pleased that he gives himself to that particular devotee. So in reciprocating with his devotees, he actually gives himself, he gives his heart to the devotees. But in regards to establishing dharma in this world, he applies the principle of Nishkama Karma Yoga. Because the nature of this world is that, although you may establish dharma, after some time it will start declining. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Kali Yuga, the dharma actually goes on declining. So one may think that if it is anyway going to decline, what is the need for establishing dharma? It seems a logical question, but actually this question is posed by people who are affected by the philosophy of Daivavad. So there is Karmavad and Daivavad. Karmavad means what? Karmavad means those who think themselves to be the cause of the any action. That everything is accomplished simply by my own effort. They don't consider the important element of the Supreme Lord. So there are many modern self-help books, many of the motivational speakers, they talk about be positive, just work hard, and then you can accomplish everything. They give many examples for failures as stepping stones to success. But they never talk about the daiva factor. So such people are influenced by the karmavad. And daivavad means, those who are influenced by daivavad, they say that, oh, everything is predestined. Ultimately, it is the will of the Lord that it is going to happen. So they are not inclined to put effort on their own. They are not inclined to put effort. They only consider the hand of the Supreme Lord, but they don't consider the element of their own effort, which is a very important thing. So those who are affected by Daivavad, they say that, oh, what is the need to establish dharma? So Kali Yuga, it is definite that Kali Yuga is going to degrade. There is no doubt about it. So there is no need to put effort to establish dharma. So it seems a logical question, but this question is posed by people who are affected with the disease of Daivavad. In fact, Prabhupada highlights this point in the first canto, when Parishit Maharaj punishing Kali. And Parishit Maharaj saw the symptoms of Kali, when Kali was dressed like a king, was trying to torture the cow and the bull. Parishit Maharaj immediately took his sword and he was about to kill the Kali personified. So there Prabhupada writes that he says that it is no argument that the age of Kali such symptoms are predestined. Then if so, then why was there preparation for fighting out such symptoms? And such arguments are offered by lazy and unfortunate men. Then Prabhupada explains, in the rainy season, it is predestined that rain will come. But we have to take precaution of carrying the umbrella when we go out. It is predestined that our body will become dirty. but we every day take bath, knowing well that our body will become dirty after 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hours. It is predestined that after 5 hours, our stomach will become hungry. Sir, what is the need to eat now? Anyway, it is going to become hungry again. I'm going to become hungry again. Krishna, in order to, knowing well that it is going to decline, but still to appear to establish dharma, knowing well that it is going to decline, that actually requires the principle of Nishkama Karma Yoga. Because that Nishkama Karma Yoga means what? You practice your dharma without expectation for the results of the activity. So if we expect that, oh, it is going to remain like that forever, then you cannot actually appear to establish dharma. So Krishna comes again and again to establish dharma, knowing well that dharma will decline. So therefore, the same two principles will also have to be applied in our life also. So in regards to establishment of dharma, is actually, this dharma is something related to this material world. Reciprocation of this pure devotees, it is something which Krishna does eternally in a spiritual world also. So in the same way, in the sadhaka's life also, there are dharma, there is an eternal dharma, which is our devotional service to Krishna, and the different temporary dharmas which are related to this world. So just like Krishna applies the principle of Nishkama Karma Yoga to establish dharma, in regards to dharmas of this world, we have to apply the principle of Nishkama Karma Yoga, which Krishna mentions many places in the Gita. Suke duke same kritva laba labau jaya jayo. Tato yuddha yajasva. Says that don't worry for the happiness or distress or profit or loss. You must fight the battle without seeing the result. But in regards to our eternal dharma toward the Supreme Lord, there we have to offer our heart to Krishna. We are supposed to offer our heart to the Guru and Krishna. And that is also indicated many places in the Gita. Manmana bhava madbhaktu madhyajimam namaskuru mame veshi satyevam atmanam matparayanaha. Mame veshasa yuktvaivam atmanam matparayana. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. The highest occupational duty of a living entity is to perform devotional service to Krishna, which must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So these are the two principles. At least we must know that although our present level, we may be struggling to practice these principles. We may have different expectations in regard to performing our temporary dharma. We may not have so much of advance in the sense like we may not be able to offer our heart to Krishna. But at least we have to know what are the principles to be applied for which dharmas. So the principle of offering our heart to Krishna, rendering unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service in regards to our eternal dharma, and regards to the dharmas of this particular world, which are temporary in nature, we have to apply the principle of Nishkama Karma Yoga. That means, we perform those dharmas without expectation to enjoy the results of the activity, and offering the results to Krishna. And these two principles we learn from Krishna himself. What principle he applies for his primary reason and for his secondary reason. So, another important thing which I want to discuss is that the principle of establishing legacy. So this principle is a very important principle. In fact, when a person is a leader, as a leader, he may be carrying out different activities, may be accomplishing different projects. But one of the important duty of a leader is also to create a legacy for the future. Just like in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 12th chapter, Yudhishthira Maharaj is asking a question to all the Brahmanas about his grandson Parikshit Maharaj. So Parikshit Maharaj is a great devotee of Krishna. The Brahmanas told that this son is going to be a great devotee of Krishna. But then Yudhishthira Maharaj asked a question, Apyesha Vamshyan Rajarishin Punya Shlokan Mahatmanaha Anuvartitas with Eshasa Sadhu Vadena Sattama. So Krishna says that, will this particular son follow our lineage of reputed saintly kings with fame and good praise? So in this particular question, Yudhishthira Maharaj is expressing his concern whether this particular grandson, Parikshit Maharaj, is he going to follow in the footsteps of our great forefathers? That means he is asking that, is he going to continue the legacy of our forefathers? So Yudhishthira Maharaj definitely was satisfied to know that Parikshit Maharaj is a devotee of Krishna. But now he wants to know even further whether he is going to continue the legacy of our forefathers, whether he is also going to be a great king. So therefore, Prabhupada writes here in the purport that the duty of a king is that he must leave behind an heir equally qualified to rule over the innocent citizens. Like he must leave behind a qualified son or a grandson who can actually continue the legacy of actually establishing dharma. So when we talk about this principle of legacy, so we may think in terms of, this principle applies to, on an institutional level, in the sense like guru should actually create a disciple who can actually continue to continue the legacy, or a GBCs should actually create the next generation of GBCs. Like there is a GBC college in which they train the future governing body commissioners of ISKCON, they train the future people. But the principle of legacy, it is not just limited to the Guru Sishya or the GBCs or in the level of a king. So even in the level of a family, the principle of legacy is very important. Like for example, a Mataji might have learnt how to make Puran Poli from her mother. So that it becomes an important principle that she should make sure that the same thing is being taught to the next generation. So therefore, success without creating a succession is actually a failure. So we might have attained success while performing different thing, but if we have not created a succession, it is a failure. So in that sense, the principle, whatever the good things which we have learned from our superiors, it could be from our Guru Varga or it could be from our parents, the good culture. Have we passed on that culture to the next generation? As I mentioned, that it also applies, even this, it may apply to the principle of cooking or any particular values or this one. When we pass on to the next generation, then it becomes a complete success. Otherwise, in one sense, it is a failure. So therefore, we find like this being highlighted in many places in the Bhagavatam, like the story of Chitraketu Maharaj. From one point of view, we say that Chitraketu Maharaj was so determined to get a son that he went on to marry so many number of wives. But one may say that how Chitraketu Maharaj is so attached to actually getting a son. But actually, from another perspective, which is also highlighted by Prabhupada, is that it is not that he was simply infatuated to get a son. He wanted to discharge his responsibility as a king to create a legacy for the future, who can actually continue the legacy of Dharmic kingdom. So from that point of view, we say that that there was an element of attachment, but there was also an element of the responsible nature of wanting to create a legacy. So therefore, even on a teacher, teacher may teach the students, but his teaching becomes complete when he can create a student who can become the teacher and who can actually continue the teaching. So at least whatever you have learned, at least we should pass on to one person who can continue the legacy. More the number of people, that is better. So continuing this principle of legacy, so when we see in the example of the Pandavas, so Parikshit Maharaj's father is Abhimanyu and his mother is Uttara. So when you study the character of Abhimanyu, so Uttara, Abhimanyu was married to Uttara, so Uttara's father is Virata. So when Virata wanted to give his daughter Uttara in marriage to Abhimanyu, that time Abhimanyu was more excited to fight in the battle than for getting married. Like the battle of Kurukshetra is going to start. So there is a great uncertainty whether Abhimanyu will actually survive or he may die. That means his daughter will become a widow for the rest of the life according to the culture that time. But in one sense, from a practical perspective, it is a completely wrong decision to marry one's daughter to a man who is more excited to fight in the battle. That means there is uncertainty of his going to life or death situation. From the point of view, Virata, it is a very wrong decision. And if we see from the point of view of Uttara, getting married to a man who may die within a few days, which means living a widow for the rest of the life, it is actually completely a wrong proposal. But still, Uttara actually chose to get married to Abhimanyu. So here we see, Abhimanyu also married Uttara. So one important principle we see here is that, Going Through has written a beautiful article. The marriage means it's not simply happily remaining together, but the primary consideration becomes a responsibility and actually following dharma. If Abhimanyu had been more concerned about the enjoyment, then he would not have participated in the battle. If Uttara had been more concerned with living happily after marriage, then she would not have chosen to marry with Abhimanyu. So in both their cases, in both their character, we find the primary consideration was actually being responsible and the establishment of dharma. And the secondary consideration becomes the enjoyment. So that is why Prabhupada writes, in one Upanishad purport, that human life is a life of responsibility. So the primary consideration is the responsibility. The secondary thing becomes the enjoyment or other thing. So when the secondary becomes the primary, then that is the cause of the so many problems in the relationships. So we can see that Abhimanyu and Uttara both had their spirit of sacrifice. So in one sense, Abhimanyu, he fought bravely in the war. Uttara did not do anything in the forefront. But the fact that she chose to get married to a warrior like Abhimanyu, who can die, that itself is a great sacrifice, although the sacrifice was in the background. So that is why Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj writes in one of his book that he talks about the concept of a good leader and a great leader. So good leader is one who accomplishes many things by being in the forefront. But a great leader is one who may not be in the forefront, but he inspires others to do great things. He inspires others to actually perform many activities. So he remains in the background. So in that sense, Uttara did not do anything in the forefront, but she was a greater leader than Abhimanyu because she remained in the background, she supported Abhimanyu, and by inspiring Abhimanyu, she performed even a greater sacrifice. So from that point of view, in the Vedic culture, the position of the women which is given in the Vedic culture is to act as a great leaders, which is even greater than the good leaders who actually being in the forefront, they accomplish many things. But by being in the background, they accomplish much more things by inspiring others to accomplish those things. So, because Abhimanyu and Uttara, they had the spirit of sacrifice, they planted that spirit of sacrifice in the form of Parikshit Maharaj. So, Abhimanyu's spirit of sacrifice was coming from the Pandavas. So, Pandavas had the spirit of sacrifice and that was actually passed on to Abhimanyu. And Abhimanyu and Uttara, they had the spirit of sacrifice. And that spirit of sacrifice was actually planted in the seed of Parikshit Maharaj. And when Krishna protected Parikshit Maharaj, from one point of view, Krishna protected his devotee. Because the other sons of the Pandavas were killed in the battlefield. Abhimanyu was killed in the battlefield. The other five sons were actually killed by Ashwatthama when they were sleeping. So the only son who was actually left was the Parikshit Maharaj who was there in the womb of actually Uttara. So when Ashwatthama shot that Brahmastra at Parikshit Maharaj, Krishna actually protected Parikshit Maharaj by entering the womb of Uttara. So Krishna not just protected the devotee Parikshit Maharaj, but Krishna protected the legacy of the continuous sacrificial spirit of the Pandavas by protecting Parikshit Maharaj. Because the sacrificial spirit of the Pandavas is coming through Abhimanyu and is coming through Parikshit Maharaj. So we can see why I am highlighting this story is that how Krishna felt important that the legacy of the sacrificial spirit of the Pandavas must continue in the future. So therefore he protected Parikshit Maharaj. So because Pandavas ruled the kingdom for 40-50 years. Parikshit Maharaj ruled for greater number of years. So coming to the point, in fact, in another class, Isulnas Radhanath Maharaj explained that, again, related to the principle of legacy, that when Prithu Maharaj was showing his gratitude toward the four Kumaras, he says that, Yai Ridrishi Bhagavata Gatiratma Vada Tush Ekantato Nigamibi Pratipaditana Tushyant Adabra Karuno Svakritena Nityam Konama Tat Pratikaroti Vinoda Patram. So Prithu Maharaj says, after actually receiving the transcendental knowledge from the four Kumaras, he speaks this verse, he says that you four Kumaras have performed unlimited service, you have shown unlimited compassion by giving transcendental knowledge. And in fact, I can never repay this debt towards you for giving this transcendental knowledge. And he says that if a person thinks that one can repay the debt towards the spiritual master for giving the transcendental knowledge, such a person becomes a laughing stock in the assembly. He becomes a joker in the assembly of a learned people. Because it is never possible to repay the debt toward the spiritual master. So, Sulnas Radhanath Maharaj explained that actually it is never possible to repay the debt of transcendental knowledge toward the spiritual master. And then he said, the only way by which we can repay this debt is that by actually applying that knowledge in our own life and by sharing that knowledge with others. So that means basically by creating the legacy of, so that the knowledge actually goes on further. So in that sense, so these examples actually highlight the principle of legacy. But, So coming to this point that when Krishna considered so much important that the legacy of the sacrificial spirit of the Pandavas should continue, but in regards to his own dynasty, so in his dynasty he himself had 16,108 wives. Through each wife he had actually 10 sons. So that means 1,61,800 sons. 1,61,080 sons. And then through each of the son he had, each of those sons, they married, when they married, they begot 10 sons. So in that sense, you may say that there are like 16 lakh so many grandsons, and apart from that, like so many members of the Adu dynasty. But here, but in regards to his own dynasty, he did not leave behind a legacy, because this chapter is about the curse upon the Adu dynasty. The whole 11th canto is going to conclude about with the actually the annihilation of the Adu dynasty, in which practically there was not even all the members of the Adu dynasty, they got killed in a fratricidal war, which will be discussed in the future classes. So now what I want to highlight is that if Krishna considered so important that the sacrificial spirit of the Pandava should continue, the legacy should continue, why did he allow for his own dynasty to actually to get killed in the fratricidal war? Not even a single person was left among Pandavas. Had okay few sons among that, okay, one son he made sure the Parishad Maharaj actually lives, but Krishna had so many sons and so many members of the Adu dynasty, but not even a single person was left. So therefore the reason for the annihilation of the Adu dynasty, that actually becomes very crucial. Why Krishna arranged for the Yadu dynasty to get killed in the battle, to get killed in a fratricidal war, that becomes, in order to understand those reasons, becomes very important. Because these reasons are actually very important for all future people, and especially for the people of Kali Yuga. So therefore Krishna arranged for this pastime of the Maushal Leela. So in regards to the reasons for the annihilation of the Adu dynasty, the acharyas have mentioned several points in their purport. I will just go through some of those points. So, for example, around 9 or 10 points they mention. One of the points they mention is that, like, different acharyas, they have written purports from different perspective. Like, for every pastime, there is a divine perspective. The divine perspective is everything is happening by the will of Krishna. Ultimately, the whole pastime happened by the will of Krishna. But when we see only from a divine perspective, we may not learn some lessons which may be needed for us as a sadhaka. So therefore, it becomes important, we have to see from a human perspective also. So some acharyas have written purport from human perspective. But when we see only from a human perspective, means, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was put, from a divine perspective, it was actually arranged. Arjuna was actually put under illusion by Krishna so that Krishna could speak the Bhagavad Gita. So it was the will of Krishna that Arjuna acted like that. But on a human perspective, Prabhupada writes many purports that Arjuna is actually, he was speaking from a bodily platform, he was attached to his family members, he was concerned with more about his own salvation, because he was not feeling good about fighting with his grandfather Bhishma or Drona, who are actually supporting Adharma. He was not concerned about his own feelings of actually feeling good or bad. He was not seeing the broader perspective of establishing Dharma. So Prabhupada gives many lessons from a human perspective using Arjuna as an instrument. So when we see only from a human perspective, so we may consider, oh, Arjuna is like any other person, materialist who is also on the bodily platform. So we may consider a great devotee to be like any other materialistic person. So we may commit an offense. So therefore, it becomes important to see both from a human perspective and from a divine perspective. We have to see from a divine perspective so that we don't actually misunderstand the great devotees who are involved in those pastimes, who are used by Krishna to play that role. And we have to see from a human perspective in order to learn the lessons which Krishna is actually imparting to us through those devotees, through those roles. So similarly, in the annihilation of Yadu dynasty, so some acharyas, different acharyas have given different purports. Like for example, some acharyas say that some of the Yadus became inimical towards the Lord. And because they were also greatly powerful, so it was Krishna considered that they will become a great burden on the Mother Earth. So I also need to remove the burden of these Yadus who are greatly powerful. They will cause a great burden to the Mother Earth. So therefore, I must arrange these Yadus also to get removed from the Mother Earth. So in this, it was highlighted the Yadus became inimical towards the Lord. And another acharya, they say that foolish people, the common foolish people, they will consider the whimsical behavior of the Yadus as the will of the Lord. Because these Yadus, they are inimical towards me, they may act whimsically in the future after my disappearance. And the common people of this world, they may consider the whimsical behavior of these Yadus who have become proud, they may consider that as the will of mine. In that way, a wrong legacy can be created. So therefore, I don't want that to happen. So therefore, Krishna wanted the Yadu dynasty to be annihilated. Another point which is highlighted is that, so this is from a divine perspective. So Krishna felt, after my disappearance, the Yadus, in separation from me, they would actually trample Mother Earth. And they would trample Mother Earth in separation of love of Krishna, separation of love towards me, they will trample the Mother Earth and they will cause a great burden to the Mother Earth. So therefore, I must arrange for them to get removed from the Mother Earth. And then another reason is that Krishna wanted to teach the conditioned souls about the temporary nature of this particular material world. That even that Krishna did not live in the material world for all time to come. Krishna did not allow even his members of the Yadu dynasty to live in the material for all time to come. He actually withdrew the Yadu dynasty. In that way, Krishna did not give the highest value to the material world. He wanted to teach the conditioned souls about the temporary nature of the material world. And then another reason is that Krishna wanted to protect the common people from the Mayavad philosophy. So Mayavad philosophy is that people will consider the Mayavad philosophy is considering the human being to be God, or considering or bringing God to the level of a human being. So common people, we may think that, well, just because these are family members of Krishna, so they are also as good as Krishna. In that way, in order to protect the common people from the Mayavad, Krishna arranged for the, and especially in Kali Yuga, it will become even more prominent. So therefore, Krishna arranged for the Yadu dynasty to be withdrawn from the planet Earth. And then, another very important lesson is that, Krishna, Krishna wanted to teach the lesson of showing proper respect to the Brahmanas. He wanted to show the power of the curse of the Brahmanas. He wanted to show that even if my own family members, if they become inimical towards, if they commit an offense to the Brahmanas, I will not tolerate it. I don't mind even annihilating my own family members if they actually commit an offense to my devotees. So, that is another powerful lesson Krishna wanted to teach, because we'll see in the future verses how the Yadu Kumaras, they actually behaved in a disrespectful manner toward the sages who were assembled in the Pindaraka Kshetra, so in that way they offended those sages over there. So and then the sages actually cursed the Yadu Kumaras about the curse upon the Yadu dynasty. And another important point is that Krishna wanted to teach that the birth in the family of the Acharyas or the Supreme Lord is not the qualification for being a spiritual master. But one has to, the real qualification is that one has to exhibit the qualities of the Acharyas. One has to exhibit the qualities of a spiritual master. Simply taking birth in a family is not the qualification. Because this particular thing is very much prominent in Kali Yuga. The sense that we see in the either in the political field or in the spiritual field. So, newspaper is abound with so many news. So, in everywhere we find that just because somebody is born in a particular family, they consider that person also as good as the same political leader or a spiritual leader. So that is one of the diseases of Kali Yuga. So therefore, Krishna thought that people will consider that just because somebody is born in my family, they are as good as me only, they will become the spiritual master. So Krishna wanted to teach this, that birth in the family of the Acharyas is not the qualification. Even if my own family members become proud, if they did not actually show proper behavior towards the Brahmanas or the Vaishnavas, I do not want to consider them to be my descendants. I do not want to establish the legacy through them. I want to establish the legacy through my pure devotees who may not be born in my dynasty, but who actually understand my mood. So therefore, Krishna wanted to establish this particular lesson. And then, so therefore, Krishna, in one sense, arranged for the, Krishna bewildered the discriminatory power of his own family members. He actually bewildered them so that they don't have the proper discrimination, and his own family members actually offend the Brahmanas, in order to bring proper discrimination for the conditioned souls for the future. So Krishna bewildered the discriminatory power of his own descendants in such a contradictory way, so that these seminal descendants become recognized as deviant, and the actual qualification to be a representative of the Lord, which is unalloyed surrender to the will of Krishna, remains prominent. So there are two things. One is the seminal line and the spiritual line. Seminal line and a spiritual line. Seminal line is that line through the family, and spiritual line is the line through the Guru Sishya Parampara. So out of the two, the spiritual line is actually more important. When you see some railway lines, sometimes you may find that there are two lines which are going, but there is no train which is actually going on the other line. You may wonder, like, why there is no train which is going on the other actually line. And then when you are going in the train, after some time you notice that the other lines actually stop at a particular place. It breaks. So therefore there is no train which is going on the other line. So that means it is discontinued. So, like, the seminal line, it may not actually preserve the transcendental knowledge. And the transcendental knowledge may be stopped at a particular this one. But the spiritual line is something where through the Guru Sishya Parampara, Krishna's message is actually carried on to the next generation. That is like the railway lines which is actually going toward the destination. There is no actually breakup in those railway lines. So, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva Goswami gives description of the different dynasties, we find that whenever there is a seminal line, he actually describes that the son of this particular king is this, son of this particular king is this. He actually describes in great detail. And whenever in those seminal lands some great devotee comes, then suddenly he puts a break, and then about that particular devotee he describes for 2-3 chapters. Like he puts a break at Ambarish Maharaj, and then he describes for 2 chapters. Like that it goes. So the spiritual line is given more important. So anyway, so these are the lessons. So the principle of, so we talked about the principle of how important it is to establish the, actually continue the legacy. Because it is not just our own practice of spiritual life. It is also important, like, we create a better atmosphere for the future generation to continue the practice of bhakti, to continue the practice of dharma. So, we see that in this world, the bad population, Varna Sankara population, that is getting multiplied in great numbers. There are certain religions, like, they increase the Varna Sankara population in great numbers. So, if the good people who can bring good population, or when they do not actually perform their duty, then they actually increase the burden of the Mother Earth. So even the bad philosophies are actually being propagated in so many different books. They are propagating different mediums. The people who have the right philosophy, if they simply keep it to themselves, if they do not share that with others, then they actually increase the problems in this world. So therefore, the principle of legacy is important, simply, not simply our own practice. So then if Krishna had actually arranged for the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, then how did he establish the legacy? So for that, I will just read one particular verse. So Krishna felt that, because when I appeared, I performed so many pastimes in this world, and so many pastimes, and so I exhibited so many qualities. By seeing the footsteps of Lord Krishna, people became attracted to him, and thus they wanted to offer their bodily activities to the Lord as his followers. In this way, Krishna very easily spread his glories, which are sung throughout the world by the most sublime and essential Vedic verses. So Lord Krishna considered that simply by hearing and chanting those glories, conditioned souls born in the future would cross beyond the darkness of ignorance. And being satisfied with this arrangement for the future deliverance of the conditioned souls, that means how the future conditioned souls will get delivered, by hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna, by the pastimes of Krishna. So being satisfied with this arrangement, Krishna left for his desired destination. So in this way, Krishna chose to establish its legacy not through his family members, because he wanted to teach several lessons which are very relevant for the people of Kali Yuga. And instead, he chose to leave behind a legacy through his pure devotees, and through the hearing and chanting of his pastimes. And lastly, I'll conclude with this verse. So in this particular purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur highlights that some of the members of the Ayodhya dynasty, they actually became, they considered being born in the same family as Krishna, they considered Krishna to be on the, they considered themselves also to be on the same level as Krishna. So he highlights the principle of familiarity breeds contempt. So with a when a person is having a material vision, one considers oneself to be also as great as the Supreme Lord, or as great as the spiritual master, or one may consider the spiritual master or the Supreme Lord to be on the on an ordinary level. So this is the result of a mundane vision. So there is one particular verse which we'll take up in this connection in the fifth canto, when Rishabhadev is actually giving instruction to his sons. After giving instruction to his sons, then he tells his sons that tasmad bhavanto hridayena jata sarve mahiyamsham amum sanabam ಅಕ್ಲಿಷ್ಟ ಬುದ್ಧಿಯ ಭರತಂ ಭಜದ್ವಂ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷಣಂ ತದ್ಭರಣಂ ಪ್ರಜಾನಾಂ. ಸೊ ರಿಷಭದೇವ್ ಸೇಸ್ ದಟ್ ಮೈ ಡಿಯರ್ ಸನ್ಸ್, ಆಲ್ ಆಫ್ ಯು ಆರ್ ಬಾರ್ನ್ ಆಫ್ ಮೈ ಹಾರ್ಟ್ ವಿಚ್ ಇಸ್ ದ ಸೀಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಆಲ್ ಸ್ಪಿರಿಚುವಲ್ ಕ್ವಾಲಿಟೀಸ್. ದೇರ್ ಫೋರ್ ಯು ಶುಡ್ ನಾಟ್ ಬಿ ಮೆಟೀರಿಯಲಿಸ್ಟಿಕ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಎನ್ವಿಯಸ್ ಮೆನ್, ಅಂಡ್ ಯು ಶುಡ್ ಅಕ್ಸೆಪ್ಟ್ ಯುವರ್ ಎಲ್ಡೆಸ್ಟ್ ಬ್ರದರ್ ಭರತ್, who is actually exalted in devotional service. And if you engage yourselves in Bharat service, then your service to him will include my service, and you will rule the citizens automatically. So this is an important lesson verse in connection to the principle of mundane vision, which is being highlighted in the purport. So when Rishabhadev speaks this verse, Rishabhadev is essentially telling his sons that you must accept Bharat as your superior, you must actually worship him. So then the sons of Rishabhadev, they ask Rishabhadev that you have previously instructed that attachment towards the family members or the children or the brothers or this one, you said that one should not be attached to the family members. After forbidding the attachment towards the family members, why are you teaching that we should become attached to our brother Bharat? So then Rishabhadev says that actually Bharat is the best of the great devotees. Not only I instructed you not to become attached on the material platform, simply on the family to the family members, but I also taught you about the principle of serving the great devotees. So do not see Bharat Maharaj simply with a mundane vision as your own brother. See Bharat with the spiritual vision. He is the best of the devotees. So then they ask that, how can we worship Bharat since he is equal to us as a brother? So Rishabhadev says that you should not have a material vision. You must see with a spiritual vision. So worship with the pure intelligence. So Devamrit Maharaj explains in a class, in the presence of the advanced devotees, in the presence of the spiritual master, advanced devotees, we see our mind through them. It's like when we come in contact with some highly advanced people, then we become conscious of our own anarthas. So we think that I should not be actually thinking like that. I should not. So we see our mind through their purity, through them. But many times when equals are present, we see them through our mind. So in one sense, the sons of Bharat Maharaj, they were seeing Bharat Maharaj through their material mind. So why should we worship him? But Rishabhadev is telling that Bharat Maharaj is a very advanced personality. Do not see with a mundane vision. He is the best of the devotees. So then the sons of Rishabhadev say, we worship you because you are our father and also the Supreme Lord. And we serve Narada Muni and great devotees because they are the cause of bhakti. And because we are princes, we should protect the citizens. But why should we worship Bharat Maharaj? So Rishabhadev says, by worshipping Bharat Maharaj, worship of me and protection of the citizens is accomplished. And this is my desire. So this particular verse, again, Rishabhadev is telling the sons to actually not to see Bharat Maharaj with a mundane vision. His Holiness Rajanath Swami Maharaj, when he gave a class on this verse in one of the Vyas Puja lectures, he mentioned that after giving many instructions to his sons, Rishabhadev is giving the most practical instruction in this particular verse. So what he is saying is that cooperate with Bharat Maharaj. Actually, every single son of Rishabhadev is extremely qualified. Some of them are great scholars, the Navayogendras, Paramahamsa Sannyasis, even Krishna quotes them. But Rishabhadev is telling the sons not to be envious of Bharat Maharaj, but cooperate with Bharat Maharaj. So then he said, if there is in any way to apply the philosophy of bhakti in a practical way, then it is to not be envious of other devotees and to cooperate with them. And the practical way of receiving the Lord's mercy is to not be envious and to be the servant of our devotees. So in this way we see that Rishabhadev is instructing us, instructing the sons not to see Bharat Maharaj with a mundane vision. To summarize, so today we highlighted about the, we gave the summary of the 11th canto. What is the 11th canto? And then we talked about the purpose of Krishna's appearance in this world and what principles Krishna applies while dealing with his devotees and while establishing dharma. And how we have to apply the same principles in regards to our eternal dharma and regards to our temporary dharma. And then we talked about the importance of creating a legacy for the future, how this legacy applies in all levels, even in the level of a family, in the level of an institution. And then we give the example of Parikshit Maharaj protecting the sacrificial spirit of the Pandavas by actually protecting Krishna protecting the sacrificial spirit of the Pandavas by protecting Parikshit Maharaj. But Krishna arranged for the annihilation of his own dynasty. So then we discussed, if Krishna considered so much important the principle of establishing legacy, why did he arrange for the annihilation of his own dynasty? So we discussed the several reasons from the Acharya's purports in regards to the reasons for the annihilation of Yadu dynasty. And then finally talked about the principle of not having the mundane vision from the instruction of Rishabhadev to his sons. I think I'll stop here. Since it is 10 o'clock, I think I'll end here. ग्रंथरा श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय।
हरे कृष्णा, देयर आर फ्यू अनाउंसमेंट्स। देयर इज अ वरिष्ठ